Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for January 8th, 2020. No, sorry, February.
You're like a month behind.
February 8th, 2021. It feels much like January 8th. All the days run together.
Well, February's is the worst possible month of the world in the Northeast because it's February where winter really begins. I mean, in December, you have the twinkly lights, and Christmas is coming, and so it's winter, but, you know, there's Christmas. Now it's just winter with no Christmas, nothing.
Yeah.
This is bleak. It's going to be bleak.
And Valentine's Day is a kind of a bleak
I hate Valentine's
sea
Day,
like of red in every store. It's so ugly. You just go in and it's just seas and seas of red, grotesque, shiny.
It's the liturgical season in which evangelical churches have sermons on romance and marriage.
Oh gosh, that's really discouraging.
A 5-part series on marriage.
I mean,
from Pastor Kent or Pastor Kinney or whatever Kent. Pastor. Think of a 2021 name, Kent.
That's
Brett. I don't know. I like this. There's nothing to say, but like Pastor Matt, that locates me in Generation X because there are lots of Matts in Generation X. So, what's a particularly millennial name?
I don't know, Justin.
Tyler is a particularly Gen X name, isn't it? I like
Tyler. Okay, boomer.
But I like Tyler. We have a Tyler with my sister, but that's a particularly...
That figures in a lot of memes, right. Tyler.
Yeah, right. Tyler's and the Lutheran satire. Tyler's the guy who's in the pool.
Trevor.
Pastor Trevor.
This is not what we're supposed to talk about today.
No, I know.
We're going to talk about the Super Bowl for 1 second.
Yeah.
For as much time as we watched it.
I watched it. I just watched it to the halftime. I couldn't deal. I have so many issues with Tom Brady. He doesn't know about any of them. I haven't told him.
I didn't know about this either. What kind of issues do you have?
I don't know. I despise him.
What?
With the love of the Lord.
Why? I mean, how could you possibly have negative feelings towards another human being who you haven't met even?
Well, he's just, I don't know.
What's wrong with him?
It's just irritating that I couldn't stand the Patriots before. I'm beginning to warm up to them.
But now that he's gone.
Now that he's gone. And I always felt a little sorrow in my heart for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because they're always so bad. And then Tom Brady shows up on their team and they win the Super Bowl.
So now you don't like them?
Nope. Don't like them now. And I was, I, I've mean, always, I've always liked win. The Chiefs too. So I wanted the Chiefs to win, but.
They just want to win. If they are doing whatever it takes.
I know.
Which is what you would do. You would do the same thing in their shoes.
I'm not saying I wouldn't. Doesn't make my.
I mean, Tom Brady seems like a, I don't know. I have no opinion about him whatsoever, except I saw that he is in his 40s, and I thought that was pretty great.
I doubt his humanity.
What, you think he's a cyborg?
Yeah, something. You don't do this in your... When I was 42, when we were 42, we were already getting sleeping injuries. We were already getting... waking up feeling sore. And he's playing professional football. You're 44, right?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I know. I haven't even won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't even want to go to a Super Bowl. I don't think that my flesh could go to the Super Bowl and sit in a seat for that long. Everything would go to sleep and I'd have to hobble out.
Well, apparently someone was saying that after like 35 or 36, these professional athletes have like deep body massages before every sporting event or for practice. Like they have these, their personal masseuse goes with them everywhere. So maybe if we had a deep body massage every time okay, we did something.
Like get out of a chair.
Right.
Then we could do it.
I hope that dog that just got off her bed is not going to want to come back on the bed.
Oh, he will. He'll come back up in just a little bit.
We have a geriatric dog who
likes to get up and down off the bed, but he can't do it himself anymore.
Right. And then when you pick him up and put him in the bed, he pretends like he's jumping. Like he's like,
yeah.
Like he's the one in whose power the leap from the air, leap into the air is taking place.
Except he's really heavy. So
yeah. Yeah.
Well, what did you think of the halftime show?
I was pleasantly surprised. I don't like the music at all. I thought it was horrible. I don't like that genre of music.
What genre is it?
I don't know what it is. Like the techno pop kind of thing. I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, I don't like it. But I was pleasantly surprised. There was no pole dancing or simulation of sexual acts in front of children, like there was last time. So that in my book is a win. When it's not open pornography on the stage.
That's really great.
They were
all clothed. There were no women at all in this one. It was just male.
It was a little weird moment with the jock strap on the head.
Male handmaiden option with the red and the white. Like right. It was the handmaid's version for men.
Right. Right. It was a little weird with the weird, dizzying walk through the lit hallway where you feel like you're going to throw up because it's, maybe that's just because we're old. But I remember, I'm going off on a tangent here, but I used to love, one of the ways I used to bond with my boys was playing Xbox with them. And a lot of the first person shooter games, but I get dizzy. I can't do that anymore because I have to, after like 5 minutes, I feel like I'm going to throw up. So that's what I felt like watching this guy walk through this hallway with the men with the jock straps on their head passing around him. And he was, it was really, but again, it's not simulated group sex in front of children. So this is.
Well, this seems like a really great segue. Unless you have more things
to say. I have one more thing to say.
Yeah.
And this is something that I've just. There's this weird thing in our. We don't watch TV. We haven't watched TV since last Super Bowl, I guess. So we only watch Super Bowl. We only watch TV during Super Bowl season. Everything else we watch is.
But you didn't even watch any football this year at all.
No, I couldn't stand it because I think football. Anyway, I don't want to get into football, but. So this is like we were submerged in our own lives, and we come up to see what the culture's doing. Like a groundhog during Super Bowl.
And we see our shadow.
We see our shadow and go right back down. But this culture's, there's what the running theme through a lot of those commercials, which really drove me insane, was we are awesome. Look how awesome we are. We are so awesome. Nobody can tell us we're not awesome. We are great. And let's celebrate our greatness.
In that
weird, whatever the poem, was that a poem by the abortion apologists, poetess in the beginning? What's her name?
I don't.
The African-American girl who did the poetry at the
inauguration.
It's just bad poetry. And it's, you know what's wrong with it? It's like, it's more like agitprop. It's more like propaganda. It's celebrating us. Poets don't celebrate us. That's not what poets do. Real poets.
They go into the darkness and find something and like wrestle it out into the light.
Yeah, it's really annoying. She's like the mouthpiece of the woke movement, right? She's like the propaganda minister of wokeness.
I mean, and she's so beautiful. She's so beautiful.
Of course she is.
Her outfit was so astonishing. I didn't understand it, but it wasn't a poem. It was a praise moment for people who work in hospitals, I guess. The warriors who work in hospitals.
Yeah, we're all heroes now. I mean, I guess people thought this before. We were all, everyone's a hero. Just by getting up out of bed.
I mean, in light of the fact that we injure ourselves while we're sleeping, I feel like a little bit of heroism is involved in my life. No, I'm kidding. I mean, if you are, you know, it's true. You can craft your media online, so you can see all of that stuff sort of here and there. But to have, well, I mean, each section of advertisements seemed to go on for a small eternity. So you'd have like a long time of advertising and then a long time of football and then a long time of advertising. So you really get like unbroken, you know, whole minutes of looking at very, very, very boring. The only one that I really looked at was somebody making a poster or some kind of, and it was the one that, the Let's Defy Logic one. Like, you watched that one. They're making a poster and it's for some kind of app or technology that you can use to make your art better.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then the punchline is, Let's Defy Logic. And yeah. And throughout it was, you know, we're so great, we're so wonderful, this is the best poster that's ever been made, and then it's hung on the wall as if it's a golden piece of something, and it's a poster.
Let's Defy the Logic of the Past, wasn't that the
maybe
was
it, but
that was
but,
the first line I think of the poem too, if I'm not right.
Well, but the thing in this ad, it seemed like it was just let's defy logic, and
I thought it was defy the logic of the past.
Like, the app had to use somebody had to use some kind of mathematical principle in order to make an app and get it on, you know. And certainly the people making the commercials have to know how to count and up all the money that they're going to make. You have to be able to add up your pennies at least, which seems to me some kind of math, you know, logical right. proposition. But the poster, here's where I was offended. The poster that was hung up on the wall at the end of this ad was so boring and nothing. Like, it looked like literally every other poster that's ever been made. I feel like I'm being trolled. That's why I feel like it's so cynical. Even this young lady, this gorgeous young person who is doing these poems, I feel like she's so cynical. Nobody's gonna stand up and say, that's not a very good poem, you know, or
right.
That poster kind of sucks. Are you really as great as you think you are? Like, maybe you're not that awesome. Maybe you should have done something else.
Yeah.
Nobody can say that. And so we're all just trolling each other. And like, well, the Super Bowl itself felt like a monumental troll. The person who sang, the people who sang the national anthem at the beginning, I thought it was, it's not a moment of civic anything. It's, you know, two people wailing away into their microphones who I'd never heard of. My gosh, get off my lawn, everyone. No, I did. But it's not just age. Our kids sat around and watched the opening thing. And like two commercials, and then they were like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and they left.
Yeah.
There's nothing to compel them. Like, the advertising who is the advertising for? Who's it aimed at? Because it didn't hit us and it didn't hit them. So what's the demographic? Or do they just not
I don't
care?
Think I don't you know, honestly, I don't think no one cares. I don't think advertising there are, I'm not saying there's not advertising anymore that is designed to sell a product and appeal to people. There, of course there is, but it seemed like a lot of the advertising last night was designed to push ideas. And so it didn't matter whether you liked the ideas or not. They were trying to make the ideas seem cool. Not so social, you know, Kevin Costner called it the Social Justice Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there was politics underneath all of it, and it was an ideology, and it's a lot of it that was just being kind of shoved down people's throats, and that's what propaganda does.
Yeah,
a lot of the commercials were pure propaganda, corporate, corporations pushing ideas, not rather than products.
Yeah, because they don't need to make money, I guess.
Well, I mean, they probably are making money otherwise, but they use this platform to push ideas.
It's just, you know, in the old propaganda, which, you know, feel nostalgic for the old propaganda, which was, I mean, and again, I'm not literally Hitler here, but in other previous times in history, governments or cultures wanted complete uniformity. So they wanted everybody to dress exactly the same. Doesn't, what's his name in North Korea, make everybody pick from like 3 haircuts? Or is it maybe that's not true?
No, yeah, I've heard that. That's
true. But like everybody has to wear the same thing and starve to the same degree and then be shot or whatever. In the new propaganda, there's also uniformity, but it's so tawdry. Like the costumes of the people in the advertisements and on the stage, I thought were just so lacking in imagination, so uninteresting to look at. But yeah, completely lacking in anything that could be called art. You know, so the person who sings the national anthem is usually a great artist, you know, music, who can pull off a difficult song. Well, that, you know, you can, not so anymore. It's just, it's so fatuous and boring. And because individualism is the thing that we all have to corporately bow to.
Well, it's not individualism, it's that gospel of self we've been talking
about. Well, like in the individual self, the expressive individual. The expressive individual.
But only expressing himself or herself or itself and or they self
in the right way.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you're using uniformity. You can't look within and decide that you're John Wayne.
Yeah.
That would be evil.
Yeah.
Then that would need to be transformed.
Yeah.
You would need to then go to reparative therapy to.
Is that your segue?
I guess we could do that.
We don't have to.
Yeah.
The expressive individual word comes from Carl Truman's book. He got it from somewhere else. So I didn't like that word. I think is now I'm coming across it in more and more places, but I've just read about it in Carl Truman's book, which is so good. I am listening to Jesus and John Wayne, and I think you should listen to it too.
Me?
Yeah, because it's so many.
I'm afraid I just get so angry I couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to be like, just like, so here's my, can I just say a couple of things and then we should stop this podcast?
This is our podcast, so I think that's the whole point, is you just say a few things.
I'll just say a few things. I'm listening to it sped up, so I only have 3 hours.
Could you give us the main theme of the book? What's the main theme? What's it about?
Well, I just want to say first that the problem is that you are the person that she hates most. She hasn't met you, of course.
Me personally?
But I think if she met you, you are the person that she is describing that she loathes. And Kristen Cobus Dumetz.
What's the person? Describe the person to us that she hates.
So there are just so many problems with this book. I can't. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, but you can't shoot anything.
It's concentrated hell.
She's trying to explain why evangelicals, I'm reading from the blurb, why evangelicals rallied behind the least Christian president in American history, and how they have transformed their faith in the process with enduring consequences for all of us.
That's like the, okay, first of all, just the blurb. Just the blurb is I can tell you it's going to be a slanderous book. Because I can tell you in one word why the vast majority of the evangelicals rallied around Trump, even though he's an immoral man. The mass murder of babies. And I'll tell you what, that I'm not sure what that book says, but I know that there are evangelicals and there are people in the ACNA who are engaging in just irresponsible, slanderous lies when they say things like evangelicals voted for Trump because of power. or because of racism, or because of some, you know, some inherently evil, wicked thing, when in fact it's because of abortion. Why? I don't know why it is that the people on the progressive, quote unquote progressive side, don't understand this. They have to look for some other reason, like power or racism. Well, there's
like, this book is full of like psychologizing.
Yeah, it's got to be
moral imputation.
I mean, no one was fooled. I mean, no one. Okay, setting aside that group that we've talked about before, the new apostolic reformation people and the wackos who believe that America is Israel. Setting those people aside. Everybody else said Trump is a wicked man, but he has done a lot not to kill babies. So
there's two people who didn't say that very clearly.
Who?
Franklin Graham, who said it's actually fine that he committed adultery.
Okay, that was
and,
stupid.
And James Dobson.
What did James Dobson say?
He said something very foolish. I can't remember what it was, but like, there were Christians who did get excited as it went along about Trump. And
I think that's true, but I think the reason that's true is because of his policies, not because of his personal moral. So it if you see abortions being limited, I mean, just again, the Mexico City policy is enough. Just to me, you're already with the Mexico City policy preventing thousands of babies being murdered. So that, at the Supreme Court nomination and the court, federal courts, he has had an amazing impact on that. And I think that's going to end up with fewer babies killed. So I can see why Franklin Graham might say, hey, vote for this guy.
But he, okay, there was, and I watched it happen in real time, and it was shocking to me, because a lot of people, when Mr. Clinton was elected, were unhappy about his morality, mm-hmm. and said that character matters, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So 20 years on, the religious right did finally decide that character didn't really matter.
Man, I don't remember maybe Franklin Graham said that. Did he say that explicitly? Well,
he didn't say that character didn't matter, but he said that Mr. Trump was such a great guy that it wasn't going to be a problem. So there was some hypocrisy. I think it's totally fine to say that. The religious right.
Okay, we talked about that last.
Had one stance for Mr. Clinton and then really changed its mind and feelings when it came to Mr. Trump. And people on the other side were like, what? I, you know, this guy is just as bad as Mr. Clinton, whom
I think
loved.
Right.
But
I think there's very little of that. I mean, I think maybe what I think happened was
nobody came across it here.
Last election, I was very clear. I'm not going to vote for this guy because he's Trump. And he's promising to be. To not kill babies, but he's a liar. So why should I believe him? In that sense, character mattered. You can't trust somebody who cheats on his wife 3 or 4 times because what their word is nothing. But in 4 years, he actually kept his word on that issue. So,
okay. But I'm saying there were other people who voted for him the first time and did not make the sort of nuanced moral calculus that you did. And that other people did. A lot of most people, I think, made a very nuanced
that's
calculus.
That's the thing. The irritating thing is that with someone like this woman, or we'll take Franklin Graham or whoever, extrapolate from those words to every evangelical.
Okay,
right?
So
all evangelicals are racist and put in.
Yeah, yeah. No, so let me tell you, like, I've listened to 10 hours of this book or something. Oh, maybe it's only 8. And we haven't gotten to Mr. Trump yet. And it just so I'm just going to let you know the reason that you are the way you are, the reason that you're the person that you are is because you are a religious right patriarchalist you're white and you're trying to hold on to your patriarchy and you're racist.
Yeah, see, that's so all slander. So I'm just
like letting you know.
I mean, I am a patriarchalist. I'm definitely for patriarchy, but that's not why. It literally has to do with the murder of babies.
No, you don't understand. You're wrong and you're lying or something. So what's interesting to me, so one reason why I really wanted to read this book is because I wasn't around. I'm only just now in the book in a place where I was here. So I, as she's describing things that happened, I've been able to say, wait, that's not how I remember that going down. Or, you know, I was on the right during that time and I didn't think that. So, but through the 80s, so, well, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, I wasn't here and I don't know. When she describes the moral majority and focus on the family, she had several paragraphs about Doug Wilson. Well, that was one thing that was interesting to me because she described Doug Wilson like he was, like he had a much bigger, I'm sorry, Doug Wilson What's has never been so mainstream evangelical that everybody adored him. That's never happened. That's never happened. And his vision for masculinity also has just not ever been shared by all evangelicals.
Right.
But at the same time, missing from her screed throughout for the last 8 hours has been not nary a mention about what it was that evangelicals were anxious about through the 80s and 90s and 70s, as if the things that were happening culturally were morally neutral and that evangelicals were just crazy and insane and that things were happening. So sure, I think it's not controversial at all to say the Christians from the dawn of time, when they come across something evil in the world, don't always react appropriately, don't always come up with the best solutions to the problems. Incidentally, missing from her book too, which I've said, it looks to me through the 80s and 90s like the gospel wasn't tried. You know, one reason why she's so angry about the way the men are is because Americans through the 1900s decided that the way that men and women behaved and how they expressed their gender and sexuality was a gospel issue. More important than that, all you need to do was get saved and then you needed to behave appropriately. And if you behaved appropriately, you wouldn't have kids out of wedlock, you'd have families, blah, blah, blah. I've said that. One reason why you don't need to listen to people who are talking about race and say, well, gospel's not enough. No, those people haven't tried the gospel. They have never tried the gospel, so they don't know
against,
if it works.
They're reacting against the moral majority.
Mm-hmm. No one gives the gospel a try. No one. And no one has in evangelicalism throughout. So, okay, but that's been said by lots of people. So her like digging around looking for some kind of understanding of why things are so bad from her perspective and finding out that it's white men who wanted to get married to women who acted like women and have children with them and raise those children to be godly people, that's the biggest, most horrible problem in society today is pretty epic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think you did see in the 80s and 90s, I think people saw, they didn't probably know how to articulate it, but they saw the way the culture was going and they saw that we would, maybe not in definitive terms, but I think they foresaw something like what we're experiencing now, where, you know, you're an it. Your body doesn't matter. Whatever your body is really doesn't matter. You can be whatever gender you want. And just I think people foresaw this coming, the cultural devolution coming with the ideological commitments on the left.
And they didn't know what to do.
And they know what to do. And you have this, a love, which is, I think, a good love for Western civilization, for the classics, for they would probably wouldn't be able to articulate it that way, but the traditions of Western culture with which up until the last 30 to 40 years we've been raised under, people have been raised under,
which have been the really normal
norms
women.
And expectations like, of that culture,
yeah,
which now is evil, right? It is evil. Colleges don't teach it anymore. I was reading an article the other day about how this one professor thinks classics should be just expunged from our, because they're responsible for the, you know, the racism that's everywhere, that apparently mm-hmm. pervades our culture. That's the kind of thing that people, they probably don't know how to articulate it, but they're that enrages people, and they react in a violent way, because something very, very good is being destroyed by something very, very evil.
So, but adding into this, one of her central tenets is that evangelicals have married themselves to militarism. So the statement that you just made, that we're in a war of good against evil, that is so embedded in your psyche as a white male patriarchalist that it's like wedded to your Christianity. And
that's not bad.
So anyway,
I think there are actual, you can analyze a cultural commitments using scripture and decide whether there's something good or evil about them.
Yeah, no, you can't do
yeah,
that.
And so yeah, are there some aspects of Western civ that have produced bad things? Yep. Yes, there are. Is all Western civ, you know, a hellscape? No. But wiping it away, we're creating a hellscape.
Yeah, it is really, because there's nothing else. Like, you know, it's not like some other culture where there's already a culture going on that makes sense and they are doing that, and that's great. It's just wiping away what we have and replacing it with nothing, you know, a howling with wilderness.
With the poetess.
Yeah. So the, well, anyway, I really think that you should read this book. And I think what she's trying to do is pathologize and totally exclude, you know, a sizable segment of mm-hmm. the population from having any quarter or being allowed to speak at all. That's what she's trying to
do. If you're listening and you're an Anglican, you should be worried about this, because the Anglican Compass editor tweeted out how wonderful this book was, right? This is, I think, the incursion of wokeness into the ACNA and into the evangelical world. I think it's the next huge battle that we are going to have to fight, because it will lead, if you embrace it, it will lead you outside the Christian faith into something else, some weird permutation of the Christian faith that has more to do with being a sanctified social worker than anything else. And the goals toward which you're using your sanctified social work will be anti-Christian and fundamentally.
Yeah. So that's another, I mean, there's so many problems with this book, so many. But she never articulates, like when she talks about, even throughout, she's described certain elements of Christian, even subculture or theology that are the same, have always been the same. Like,
yeah.
For instance, no sex outside of marriage. Like, that literally came from somewhere.
Is that racist?
That's from the Bible.
She said it.
And some militant language that
Did she say that's racist, or did she say?
No, it's all jumbled together. Like, okay. You know, fathers not wanting their daughters to be violated
mm-hmm.
is obviously patriarchalist and wicked. Like, you know what? In the Bible, like, this lady must not have ever read the Bible. In the Bible, some fathers give up their daughters to be violated, and those people are not good. Like,
is she presenting herself as a Christian?
We had the rape of Dinah the other day in morning prayer, and like all of our kids were there. So great. But
is she presenting herself as a Christian?
Well, she is supposedly an evangelical.
Wow.
I mean, we should look her up a little bit. Anyway, I've been so freaked out and enraged by this book. I'm not a radical, but You know, when you and I, this podcast has gone on long enough. When you and I first got, as we fell in love, the people in my life who were not very close to me, but there were people in our seminary experience, you sat in the front row and you were combative. This was the pathologizing of combative men who are willing to go to the mat for the sake of something, for another person or for an idea. That's what she's trying to pathologize. They don't want. So interestingly, ironically, she as a woman is able to just make vast and wild accusations, very controversial and combative accusations about an entire segment of the Christian world. And that's okay. But if a man were to do it, you know, God help us all.
Right.
You sat in the front row at our seminary and just went at it with professor after professor. And those people respected you for your willingness to argue and try to arrive at the truth. But you doing that was very upsetting to many women in our seminary experience. And when you and I got together, people assumed, knew that you would beat me, that I would have a lot of babies, which we did too, because I wanted to have babies. Thank God, and God help me. That I would have no, that you would eventually make me wear a veil and wear a hijab, and I would never speak. I would have no life. I would do nothing but scrub the kitchen floor. Well, here we are podcasting together all these years later. I mean, you haven't beaten me. We did have a lot of kids. All our injuries come from sleeping. So it's so much more complicated than that. You know, you can't just make wild swinging accusations about people
based on their commitments
or what they look like, actually. So I'm really shocked. And she's an academic. This person is a PhD and teaches at a college, a Christian college somewhere. So,
And you're saying it was in a book short on substantiation.
Yeah. Well, I'm listening to it, so I can't see any of her notes. It's so different from Carl Truman's book, which is so, the tone of his book is so good, so polite, so helpful. So, I fairly representing a thing that he's trying to describe. She is not able to fairly articulate what my position would be, which means she's failed the first test.
Right.
She could not fairly, so that anyone would agree with her, say what an evangelical Christian or a white male evangelical Christian really believed. She doesn't know that. She's not able to articulate it, let alone a woman in the book. Like she doesn't like Elizabeth Elliot. Do you know that Elizabeth Elliot is like a tool of the patriarchy by telling women to
That's the most Jesus. Absurd thing that ever
in my life. Yeah. Yeah. Elizabeth Elliot, that awful tool of the patriarchy, should just go somewhere else. That's how unhelpful her analysis is. And if you have read it and liked it, you should stop and go back and be able to fairly say what the other side thinks from you.
Wasn't what you saying that she, her argument that the anti-communism is really racism? Is it?
Oh yeah. Anybody who didn't like communism, it was really just about racism.
It actually is because communism is a horrific system.
Yeah. Not a mention of the millions of people who died under millions of people died under communism.
Yeah.
Nary a word. So anyway, as we close out here, because I do have other things to do today, I do think that people feel like in your patriarchal whiteness, you have maybe not as perfectly described so that they would agree with you the position of revoice and spiritual friendship. I think that you have tried really hard to do that, and you've done that fairly, especially on Stand Firm. But you are polemical and you wildly swing here and there.
I you think I haven't fairly described it? I'm using their own words.
Okay.
I went through the statement of revoice like line by line, And you said before I published it was fair.
No, I'm saying on our last podcast. I think that your thing on Stand Firm was, I thought that was really a fair representation. You took it on fairly.
But I didn't say anything there that I didn't say in our podcast.
In the podcast, you were your tone was more combative.
But I didn't describe it in any way that they wouldn't describe it.
Okay. Just want to make sure.
Nothing I said in the Stand Firm article is any different than I said in the podcast.
Okay. That's great. Good then.
Well, tell me what I was different.
I saw a hint somewhere. I can't remember where. Somebody was like, "That's not." I don't know if that's really what they think. So, but that's the point. Like in a properly discursive situation, you have to fairly represent the position of the other person. And if you can't do that, you have no business engaging. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about Kristen Dumetz, who didn't even make the attempt to represent the other side. And so you don't need to spend any time on her book because she's not able to do that. So the whole point of being able to talk about CRT, you have to know what, you have to be able to say what it is exactly that the other person is saying. And I loved your article on Stand Firm about Reboys.
Right. If you're worried about this stuff first, we are starting, not Anne, she's not part of it, but or you might be part of it, but not. You're not one of the founders. Mm-hmm. We are.
Why are you excluding women?
Anglicans for the Gospel, which is.
Is it white and patriarchal?
Its purpose is to delineate the real gospel from the woke counterfeit within the ACNA. And so we'll be taking, this is just a Facebook group right now, but we'll be taking examples of the intrusion of woke ideology into the ACNA and showing how they depart from the gospel. We'll be doing that through articles on Stand Firm, through little posts on that group page. And hopefully one day we'll have enough interest to have a conference and start this thing going to stamp out woke ideology in the ACNA, which is from the pit of hell.
Militaristic language.
Yeah.
Sets you into a class apart that is unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
So
join us. It's a war.
It's
we're
a
in,
war.
And we're going to win. The other side's going to lose.
You look really excited and happy about that.
We have Jesus on our team. It's like having Tom Brady on your team.
He can just keep going forever. Well, that's great then. Thank you for listening. I have to go get ready for another kid's birthday. They just come at regular clockwork, like a thing that's like a clock. Thank you for listening. Maybe we'll be back next week.